I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to look at the work of the Indiana General Assembly now that we're at the midpoint of the 2018 legislative session. We'll talk about what the lawmakers have done and what they haven't done so far. My guests are Brandon Smith with Indiana Public Broadcasting, Janet Williams of the StateHouseFile.com, and Diane Carden with the Times of Northwest Indiana. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about the first half of the legislative session of the Indiana General Assembly, the 2018 session. We're going to talk about what the lawmakers have done and what they haven't done. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Brandon Smith with our own Indiana Public Broadcasting, host of Indiana Week in Review, Janet Williams, who is the executive editor of the StateHouseFile.com, and Dan Carden, who is the State House Bureau Chief for the Times of Northwest Indiana. Welcome to all of you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And I probably, before we get started, I'm sure everyone out there who is paying attention realizes that since I work at the StateHouseFile.com and Janet does as well, that we are colleagues, but I don't want to withhold anything. That's my disclosure.
So the best questions will go to her then?
I hope so. They better.
That presumes there'll be any good ones, but that's okay. Brandon, I'm going to start with you, but I'm going to ask everybody's thoughts here. What are the takeaways on this legislative session so far?
Well, in many ways, the session is playing out as some of us thought it might, in that going into the 2018 session, and legislative leaders talked about this a little bit, as Brian Bosma used the phrase, there's no big, shiny object to distract or to grab attention from lawmakers the way that other sessions have been defined by, say, an income tax cut or a right to work or a road funding even last year. There wasn't that big topic going into 2018, and so it was going to be a weird session for a lot of people, and I think it's sort of playing out that way. It has been uneven. Little things have popped up for a few minutes at a time here and there, but there hasn't been one issue that's sort of defined the session up to this point. And I don't think we'll get to March 14th when they adjourn sine die, and I don't think we're still not going to have that one big defining issue.
Dan.
Well, and it's not for a lack of trying. We could have had a big defining issue. We could have passed a hate crimes law. We could have increased the minimum wage. There's a lot of things that could have been done this year that might have really made a difference in the lives of Hoosiers, or that would have encouraged more businesses to locate in the state, but they just haven't advanced in any meaningful way, in part because legislative leaders and the governor seem to want to be avoiding any type of controversy. They seem to be taking sort of a middle safe course on every issue that's coming before them. So, you know, the state insect is the big issue of the session, but you know, the working conditions of millions of Hoosiers are sort of secondary at this point.
And we are going to come back to that, because I think that's it. Yeah. Janet, your takeaway.
Well, even the Firefly issue came to the legislature thanks to some grade school kids from a West Lafayette school. I think what the session is really going to be defined by is what they didn't do. And you mentioned, Dan, you mentioned hate crime. Hate crime is one issue. I think the Chamber of Commerce was really pushing hard for township consolidation. That didn't happen. Charlie Brown, in his farewell session, was pushing for raising the smoking age, and the Chamber had signed on to that one as well. They're not doing that. There were some folks who wanted to make sure that there wouldn't be any toll roads around central Indiana. that died in committee. So I think we and for those of us, especially those of us close to education, the big thing that didn't happen is a student press freedom bill. So I think, again, if you're going to look at this session in retrospect, you're going to be, it's going to be defined by what didn't happen.
Brandon, you look like you wanted to say something.
Well, yeah, it's important to point out the first three things that Janet mentioned that didn't pass: township, which died on the final day of the halfway point; hate crimes, which died earlier the previous week; and then the smoking age bill, which was sidelined by deadlines as well. All of those were priorities of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce, and none of the three of them passed, which is unusual for a General Assembly that generally gives the chamber almost whatever it wants. So that's been an unusual thing to mark in this session.
So why is this? Why? And in some ways, we got variations on a theme here that anything that seemed to move the needle one way or the other, there wasn't a whole lot of appetite for or a whole lot of interest in, and that there is this very kind of cautious, I think Dan used middle-of-the-road approach to dealing with this session. What is driving that? I mean, what do they feel like they have to worry about or fear? I'll start with Janet on that one.
I'm not sure I completely know the answer to, but if you kind of take a look at, you know, some of the other stuff that happened, there was some legislation that isn't exactly friendly to average Hoosiers. And I think one such bill is the payday lending bill. That's a piece of legislation that could allow the storefront lending places to charge as much as 200% plus interest per year. So, I mean, they're doing things. They're just not doing things that either have come out as a result of like a thoughtful discussion with, you know, some of their advisors or that really benefit kind of rank and file Hoosiers, like Dan mentioned, you know, the wage issue.
Gotten a tweet from a listener named Sandy. And again, if you want to join the conversation via Twitter, you can find us at WFYI. You also can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Send us an email at nolimits at WFYI.org or call us at 866-476-3881. Sandy writes, "My takeaway for this session is the complete dominance of the lobbyists. Cold beer sales, payday loans are great examples. Shameful. To some degree, that's sort of what Janet was alluding to. I wanted to get that in because I thought Sandy's comment was on point. And it sort of raises, I mean, or shift the question ever so slightly before I throw it back to you, Dan. If the chamber is not driving the discussion here or driving the action, who is?
Well, I think you have kind of a lack of anybody driving the action. One of the things we've seen from Governor Holcomb is a deliberate reluctance to take the kind of aggressive policy moves that Governor Daniels did or the aggressive social issue moves that Governor Pence did. Governor Holcomb seems fairly content to just run the state, which is really what you can expect from a governor, what you should expect from a governor. He doesn't have this huge agenda necessarily that his predecessors have. That said, he did pass, and this Republican legislature approved, a massive road funding tax hike last session. And I think some of them are still a little surprised that they got away with that with such little public outrage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're going – the deadline to file for the primary election is Friday.
Tomorrow, yeah.
So I think there's going to be some people who are – one of the reasons we might not have seen so much action in the first half is because they want to avoid...
They were worried about primary challenges.
They don't want to attract a challenger. So in the second half, we might see some things that didn't advance in the first half come back up. Probably not something like hate crimes, which seems to be like definitively dead, but other issues that might come up and drive the session going forward.
And, Brandon.
Yeah, to advance that even further, it's possible we won't see anything this session because I think there's been some acknowledgement from Republican leaders that they're a little unsure of what the electoral landscape is going to look like in 2018. Obviously, historically speaking, the first year of a presidency in power doesn't do well for that party in the midterm, in the following midterm elections. So if history kind of holds in that regard, Republicans might take some hits in the 2018 elections. So they don't want to make that even more difficult for themselves by going too far out there in any one direction this session. And that might be why you've seen them track to the middle on a host of issues like Dan talked about, including and not limited to a gun bill. There was a push over the summer in a big study committee going back to last session to eliminate Indiana's handgun license requirement entirely. A study committee even sort of, depending on how you read the very interesting way they phrased their recommendation, sort of recommended that. And without any discussion, without any real debate, the first thing they did in the committee on that bill was take that out entirely and make it just about Indiana's current license structure. So that's another move that would suggest maybe they're a little worried about what the electorate might look like, and so let's not go too far in one direction on the spectrum.
I want to pick up on that, and I'll stay with you, Brandon, but I want to get everybody's thoughts. Are they paying it, you know, in addition to that normal historic trend, obviously, you know, Virginia, Alabama, a couple of state house races in, you know, just north of us and just west of us, also sent some shivers up and down the spines of the GOP. I think the Virginia one was, you know, where they went from a 2/3 majority, which is pretty close to where we are right now, to a split in power in that legislature. I'd heard some legislators at least talking to me about that and saying, okay, something's happening out there.
Yeah, you can't look at those things and not go and not look at yourself and wonder, is it going to come here next? Mm-hmm. I think generally Indiana Republican leadership acknowledges that Virginia ain't Indiana. Mm-hmm. But if you look at even earlier this week at Missouri, they had some special elections for their state house that even mm-hmm. the Democrats flipped one of the seats and made up double-digit ground mm-hmm. in all of the other ones that were up for election earlier this week. And so that puts some, you know, extra wrinkles on Brian Bosma's forehead kind of thing. He's been prepared to lose seats for two cycles now. It simply really hasn't happened all that much. In some cases, much to his surprise, I think a little bit. But I think he's prepared that might happen this time. You can only hold on to supermajorities for so long in a state that isn't, as much as it's starting to seem that way, isn't as hard red as other states around the country.
Yeah, it's a little purplish tinged. Yeah. Janet, your thoughts?
Well, I think gerrymandering has had a lot to do with the way things are shaking out in this legislative session. If you talk about what's happened, the state naturally breaks 60-40 Republican to Democrat, and the legislature is 70-30 split right now. And I think it just speaks to the degree to which
– And 80-20 in the Senate. Yeah.
Bigger than that.
Yeah.
Much bigger than that in the Senate. So I think that has, you know, created a situation where Brian Bosma and the Republicans, they may be worried about challenges, but the challenges are going to come from within their own party, not necessarily from the Democrats.
Dan.
It's also important to remember that in Virginia, the seats that were lost in the state legislature were districts that had been won by Hillary Clinton in the presidential race. And you don't have that in Indiana. Mm-hmm. I think there was one Republican district that was won by Clinton. And, you know, it's going to be a lot tougher. I know Hoosier Democrats are excited. They're raising money like crazy, especially in the congressional races. They're fielding candidates in places where they don't normally field candidates, or they're fielding qualified candidates when they might have just ran whoever stood up. So there is some excitement among the Democrats, whether that pans out on Election Day. I mean, who knows what the country's going to look like in a few months.
Brandon, you look like you had another thought. Nope. Well, so it sounds like then we're coming up on the filing deadline for these primary challenges. And that while there are a few prominent legislators, it sounds like, who are going to get primary challenges, it's not the wave that they worried about.
No, I mean, right. if you look at who's filed in a lot of these primaries, I mean, again, we don't know even what next week is going to look like. certainly not all the way out to May or November after that. So there might be some challenges that are more serious than we can realize right now. But I can only think of a handful where, on paper, this is an obvious, could be well-funded primary challenge. And then we have 15 lawmakers who have decided to retire.
We are talking about the first half of the 2018 session of the Indiana General Assembly here on No Limits today. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Brandon Smith, who is with us from our own Indiana Public Broadcasting, Janet Williams of the StatehouseFile.com, and Dan Carden with the Times of Northwest Indiana. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about the 2018 session of the Indiana General Assembly, which is halfway done. We're sort of talking about what has happened and what hasn't happened so far. My guests are Brandon Smith, who is with Indiana Public Broadcasting, Janet Williams of thestatehousefile.com, and Dan Carden with the Times of Northwest Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a couple of people have done and reach out to us via Facebook. You can find us there at nolimits@wfyi. Alexa on Facebook asks, I'd love for you to ask your guests, since the Senate Bill 33 passed the Senate and did not include specific language addressing guns in houses of worship when those houses of worship are located on public school grounds, when public schools rent out spaces for churches. Does anyone see the House adding that language in the next round, or will we see guns in public schools when they are rented to churches? Brandon, I'll start with you.
I'll be honest, I would be a little surprised to see that language added into the House. It is rather silent on this. Now, the bill does say that you can bring your gun to church, obviously if you're licensed to carry a gun. Mm-hmm. You can bring your gun to church during worship services only. That is the specific language of the bill. But it also says that employees or volunteers of that church can bring their gun with them to the church. It doesn't say when. So theoretically, if you are an employee or a volunteer of a church, say a church that uses a public school rents out space to, theoretically the law would allow you to carry that gun to the school at any time you particularly like. Do I see that changing? Not really. No.
Where did the push for this come from? I mean, was there an overwhelming outcry from people that they wanted to bring their guns to church? Or?
No, I wouldn't say overwhelming. Some churches wanted it. It was brought by an Indianapolis area state senator named Jack Sandlin, who's a particularly fervent gun rights lawmaker. And there is a church or two in his district who even came and testified to the fact that they feel like they're unsafe. They pointed to the church shooting in Texas last year as evidence why people need to protect themselves at church. And generally, this is a General Assembly. Generally, this is a General Assembly that if there's a gun bill, they are going to loosen restrictions.
We've also got another listener via Facebook. And again, you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, who writes, I was saddened to see hate crimes legislation not get passed once again. Could your panelists please share their thoughts on what made this year's attempt any different, or was it pretty much the same as in previous years? What would it take to pass this legislation in Indiana? I feel like a Cubs fan before the 2016 season. Next year, definitely next year. Janet, I'll start with you.
Well, I think that it really came down to the fact that the bill was extending protections to gays and transgender folks, and that was the real issue. And from the reporting that we did, it sounded like what was going on behind closed doors is the Senate You know, members of the Senate absolutely didn't agree with that language, and the bill would have been, you know, defeated based on that alone. So they decided to pull it. What I think was particularly difficult is the way they pulled the bill. They had a hearing one week, bringing in all kinds of people to testify, pro and con, that's fine. And then the following week, they were promising a vote. So you got a lot of people showing up to the State House, waiting in the committee room. The committee itself, it was a public policy committee in the Senate. They reversed the agenda, and they get to the very end, which was the hate crime bill, and they say we're going to have a press conference and announce that they just weren't going to have a, you know, bring it out as a vote. So, you know, a lot of people had shown up waiting to hear a vote on that issue, and it just didn't happen.
Dan, how much of this can be accounted for the fact that everybody's still leery about doing RFRA round two, as at some level, that whole idea of painting Indiana as intolerant?
Well, I think not passing a hate crimes bill does just that. What's so interesting is that the General Assembly on a regular basis passes all sorts of things just to sort of check a box that businesses look at. And, you know, we're one of five states that doesn't have a hate crimes bill. And remember, this isn't creating a new crime. This isn't criminalizing thought. It was just a sentence enhancement. It would allow a judge to consider whether a crime was motivated by bias in deciding the sentence, just as a judge does with every other aggravator and mitigating circumstance. So it wasn't this massive transformation. And to some extent, Senate President David Long argued that there is sort of a catch-all aggravator already in the law. So judges could be doing this if they wanted to. This would have just spelled it out specifically in the code. And we do stuff like that, like I said, all the time. You know, right to work, there wasn't necessarily you know, big push in Indiana saying we need right to work. It was businesses are looking for this right to work box to be checked. Let's check it and we will bring more businesses here. Businesses want hate crime protections for their employees. Let's check that box. And that just didn't happen this year.
And as Senate Democratic Leader Tim Lannan pointed out on hate crime specifically, which is, yes, there is a catch-all in current statute that if I that if someone beats someone up for being Jewish or black or gay, a judge can consider that during sentencing already. But what a hate crimes bill, what a hate crimes law would do, the way Indiana's was written, was, as Tim Lannan put it, it would be an important policy statement. There are 12 other aggravators spelled out in state statute. Now, the arguments against the hate crime bill are also arguments against the rest of the aggravator statute other than that catch-all. But it's Lannan feels like the legislature needs to stand up and say, if you do something for these reasons, we are telling you that that is a little bit worse, that we have to make a stand against that kind of hatred. And the state Senate, the Senate Republican caucus, I should say, was simply unwilling to do that.
Do we know why they were upset? Because, I saw Senator Long's argument on that, and it struck me, okay, then if you're saying it's already enshrined with this decision and these protections are already here, then that argument also can be flipped around. It costs you absolutely nothing to do this. So what was the objection to it? I'll stick with you, Brandon, but I want to hear everybody's thoughts.
Janet hit it right on the head. It's four words, and really two words. It's sexual orientation and gender identity. It's really gender identity. The religious conservative groups out there in Indiana really, really, really don't like putting anything in state law that would seek to protect transgender people. And there's enough people in the caucus who are swayed by those groups that they didn't want to advance a bill with that. And if you read between the lines, it was pretty clear that what Republicans wanted to do, even less than not passing the bill at all, was taking gender identity out and then advancing the bill.
That would have been RFRA Part 2.
That would have been RFRA Part 2.
Yeah. We are talking about – Janet, you want to add something?
Yeah, I just really wanted to jump in. After the bill kind of failed, Micah Clark's organization posted on their website celebrating, we did it, we defeated it, thanks to your calls. So I think there was a lot of – I think there were a lot of calls from the Christian right and those groups that are represented by Micah Clark's organization to vote against the bill. So as lawmakers were feeling that, they didn't want to be in a position of, like Brandon said, you know, fighting about the transgender issue in open. They did it in committee behind closed doors.
It's also important to remember that the Supreme Court decision that Senate President David Long is relying on only talks about crimes motivated by race. Supreme Court said, of course, race is an aggravating factor. It didn't say anything else about any other category, and none of the people who approved that decision are on the Supreme Court anymore. Mm-hmm. So nobody knows where the Supreme Court might be 15 years from now.
We are talking about the first half of the 2018 legislative session of the Indiana General Assembly. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@WFYI.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named John has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. John, you're on the air.
Yes, I was interested in the status of the study committee. I understand that a legislative study committee recommended on redistricting that they have more citizens' input in the process instead of having the legislators decide who's going to vote for them. And I'd like to know why it is or that they could let their own study committee's recommendation just drop off by the wayside.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. I'll start with Dan on that one.
Yeah, so this study committee met for 2 years. It was legislators and outside groups. They spent a lot of time looking at what other states do with redistricting, comparing how Indiana performs. And they did recommend, with a few dissents, a few important dissents, that Indiana move toward a system of drawing legislative boundaries that isn't directly controlled by the legislators themselves. This has been an issue all over the country.
And there have been some there have been some court decisions, Pennsylvania just recently, right. North Carolina, and a couple other places that suggest that that this process may get taken out of the legislators' hands.
Right. And there is a case pending at the U.S. Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. There are people within the General Assembly, prominent Republicans in particular, who think there is no problem because, you know, they're running the process and they think they're doing it fairly or fair enough. And so you didn't see a redistricting bill creating an outside commission move this year. What you did get was in the Senate did approve legislation that would take the standards that an outside commission probably would use and say that the General Assembly should use those same standards in terms of district compactness, in terms of protecting communities of interest and racial groups, and use those standards when they draw the maps. So at least there's the potential that some standards might end up being in the law when session ends this year, but it's definitely not the same as an outside group, possibly nonpartisan, independent at least, drawing the maps and submitting them to the General Assembly to approve.
Janet, you mentioned earlier that gerrymandering pretty much defines this session of the Indiana General Assembly.
It defines the composition of the legislature. Again, the natural breakdown of voters in Indiana, it's Republican clearly, but that split is more like 60-40 rather than 70-30 that's reflected in the House. What I was going to say is that commission that Dan referred to was chaired by a Supreme Court justice. Again, they spent 2 years looking at this issue and came up with what are considered pretty good recommendations that, you know, a number of other states actually follow. And that in the 2017 session, there was a hearing. More than 300 people showed up for a hearing when it was held when there was a bill dealing with this in the House. And the chairman of that committee, after listening to a couple of hours of testimony, decided, hey, we're not going to vote on this. We need to look at this a little more. Again, after 2 years, a committee led by a Supreme Court justice, and he decides, no, we're not going to hear it. Again, what's happening in the Senate is kind of some small steps going in that direction, and groups like Common Cause and you know, the Hoosier Environmental Council and other groups that are advocating for gerrymandering reform have applauded that, but it's kind of a – they consider it a baby step.
We've gotten an email from our regular listener, Marion. And again, if you want to join the conversation by email, you can reach out to us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Marion writes, what about Earth and animals that sustain us? More than didn't happen at the State House is addressing in any realistic way the abuses of agriculture, particularly animal agriculture and land usage, not to mention treatment of farmed animals by the relentless expansion of livestock production in Indiana. To quote Matthew Tully, Indianapolis Star columnist, at the State House, environmental concerns can't get a hearing. House Bill 1339, Senate Bill 316 concerning CAFO regulations did not get hearing. And the one bill I know that passed out of the House was House Bill 1227 by my representative permitting more chemical warfare on our already saturated, and I cannot read that word, monocrops. So much for saving the fireflies and other beneficial insects we are killing to feed corn and soy to feed animals treated as commodities in the name of feeding the world. She says, thank you, Brandon. So I'll reframe this. Yeah, well, and I guess what I would say is here, and we've heard this, you know, we did a show on, you know, the issue of forest management and logging and all of that. It's a familiar complaint that not just environmentalists or, in this case, people who are concerned about food production and farming practices and all of that, find that they just cannot even get someone to listen to them at the State House. What are those other groups like that?
Yeah, I mean, someone who believes things that I think it was Marion.
Yes, Marion.
That's sort of – she's – he or she, I'm not sure.
She.
She is not ever going to get the sort of things she wants from this General Assembly, period. When Democrats were in control, they weren't going to do these sorts of things either, quite frankly. But – particularly on the CAFO bill, I can speak to it didn't even get a hearing, and that's because House Committee Chairman Dave Wolkins is pretty blunt about it. He likes CAFOs, and he sides with them whenever possible. And he talked with members of the Hoosier Environmental Council and the folks they advocate with and for about these issues. There are some things that he can sort of agree with them on when it comes to CAFO regulation, but there are other things that he absolutely does not agree with them on. And ultimately, he decided just not to hear the bill at all while promising to continue to work with them over the coming year, as there have been study committees on this issue for at least a couple times in the last few years. I mean, that's really the end of the story. If the committee chairman doesn't agree with your bill, it's probably not going to get a hearing, let alone a vote. And that's just the way things go at the Indiana General Assembly.
Dan, what other groups are there out there that can knock on the door all they want and it's just never going to swing open?
Well, in speaking of the Hoosier Environmental Council, they've actually come out against this legislation. There's legislation that would change the distance between landfills and homes, specifically in Gary, Indiana, the part of the state that I cover. People, the city of Gary has a lot of abandoned houses that they want to demolish. They want to create a landfill where the remnants of those demolished houses can be stored and dumped and potentially sold or recycled in the future. Under current Indiana law, within Lake County, you can't have a landfill of any kind within half a mile of any residence. And that goes back to Lake County's legacy as sort of the dumping ground for Chicago going way back. One measure Representative Wolkins did advance would allow within the city of Gary, a landfill to be located within 600 feet of homes. It's, like I said, it is supported by city leaders and Gary lawmakers, but there was a town hall meeting in Gary last night where the lawmakers got an earful from constituents and citizens saying, hey, I don't want
a
big dump right by my backyard. So, you know, we'll see what happens as we go into the second half of the session with that.
We are talking about the 2018 session of the Indiana General Assembly. with my guests, three veteran political reporters, Brandon Smith with Indiana Public Broadcasting, Janet Williams of the StatehouseFile.com, and Dan Carden with the Times of Northwest Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the 2018 session of the Indiana General Assembly, which is at its halfway point. We're talking with three veteran political reporters, Brandon Smith with Indiana Public Broadcasting, Janet Williams of the StatehouseFile.com, and Dan Carden with the Times of Northwest Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can email nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us on Twitter at wfyi. So we've gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Gary. Gary writes, a medical aid and dying bill was introduced this year and, like last year, didn't even get a hearing. Polls show a majority of people are in favor of the bill. Given that, why can't it get a hearing? I'll start with Dan on that one.
You know, sometimes it's the General Assembly is an imperfect representation of the people of Indiana. You know, you take these polls and the people say that this is what they want, but the people aren't well organized enough to go and get what they want. Legislators listen to the people who have their ear, and that's usually organized groups or donors or other legislators or people that they know. And even though an issue can be broadly popular statewide, like the aid and dying bill, you know, these people, these legislators, they rely on their experience, they rely on their own beliefs, and it can take a long time for them to come around to an issue that most people are okay with. Now, on the positive side, this year you are seeing this cannabidiol or the CBD oil legislation move. A couple of years ago, this was incredibly controversial that a marijuana-derived product might be available for sale in Indiana. This is the worst thing ever. And this year, you know, after Attorney General Curtis Hill came out with his hardline opinion saying that, no, this is forbidden, we'll never allow it in Indiana, legislators are sort of giving it back to him, saying, actually, we are going to allow
it. You don't make the decisions for us, basically.
Right.
Yeah. There are interesting dynamics between the branches of government at times, too, when positions get staked out. I want to speak to something else, have us talk about something else, because it seems to me it's been kind of an undercurrent in this discussion. We talk about the number of bills that have died where, you know, they haven't gotten a hearing or there hasn't been debate or there hasn't been discussion. Janet pointed out the discussion is often in the caucus. And because we are a state that is governed by supermajorities, that means that one senses that a lot of these debates are taking place behind closed doors and no one really knows about what's going on. What has been the effect of that? I'll start with Janet since you raised the point first, but I want to hear everyone's thoughts on this.
I wanted to really kind of follow up on the question that just came in. What you have is if you really want to make progress on bills like that, they need to be sponsored and promoted by whoever's in power. And as long as Democrats are in a super minority position, a bill like Right to Die, which is kind of the easy way of describing that bill, is bills like Right to Die are not going to gain any traction, particularly when you have such a potent Right to Life movement in Indiana. So what you really need is to, you know, get somebody who's part of the majority on your side and promoting your bill.
More than that, though, too, volume matters. And Dan kind of touched on this, but the person mentioned polling. And I agree that I've seen polls that show a majority of people support something like the medical aid and dying bill. But, you know, there were polls taken late last year, statewide polls that showed a strong majority of people who believe we should allow or we should legalize Sunday alcohol sales. Even more people, an even greater majority, say we should allow grocery and convenience stores to sell cold beer. Sunday sales is going to move. Cold beer, definitely not going to happen this year. Some of it is volume, and lawmakers will tell this. You know, they hear from people when they go to the grocery store, wearing the shopping mall. Hey, why don't we have Sunday sales? Hey, why don't we? And nobody's talking about cold beer outside of the interested parties, outside of the business groups involved here. That makes a difference to lawmakers. It's why, quite frankly, alcohol issues haven't really bubbled up until this year, which is, it's not the only reason, but one of the issues is that when people are going into the polling places and casting their ballots, that's not at the forefront of their mind. There's a lot of other things ahead of it on the list. I believe that a majority of Hoosiers are probably okay with a medical aid and dying bill. I also believe that a majority of Hoosiers really don't care enough about it to make a difference to lawmakers.
So let me get back to the question, though. With so many of these discussions seem to take place behind closed doors, Dan.
Yeah, it really is unfortunate because you know, the legislators have the right under their rules to meet behind closed doors and just hash this out. But then they come out and everything's a done deal. They don't, by not airing their views in public, you don't know where different legislators stand. You don't know what the terms of the debate are. You don't know how close something is. Maybe there were 24 votes for one kind of aid in dying, but not that 25th vote. So they don't do anything. But if it was publicly known that there were 24 votes for it, you know, then those people could rally support. They could make, you know, try and, you know, attract the public support necessary to push it over the top. But because things are done behind closed doors, and I mean, like I said, it is within their rules to do that, even if it's not the best in terms of transparency. You just don't know where things stand, and a lot of issues just, you know, die without much notice because there isn't that debate in the Senate or in the House that gets reported by us to the people generally and then have a debate statewide about these issues.
Is there concern about this? I mean, I thought, you know, part of the State House lore now is the sort of Twitter rant that State Senator Mike Delf went on a few years ago proposed same-sex constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage went down in flames. And, you know, I didn't think the medium through which he expressed his displeasure was probably the most effective, but at least it did seem to me that one valid point he had there was on a matter this important that this many people care about, the discussion should have taken place out in front of the public.
Well,
is anyone besides Mike Delf worried about this?
Well, to be fair, I didn't see Mike Delf go on a rant about having a discussion about the hate crimes bill out in public. He disagreed with his caucus's decision and therefore decided to be very upset about it in public. That's easy to do when it's convenient. It's the way it's always been done, which is often the reason that things happen, and it's very rarely a good reason for it. It takes away from transparency. The hate crime bill this session is a perfect example. If you have these groups who care about it, if you have voters across the state who care about this issue, they can go ask their lawmaker. Their lawmaker might choose to tell them where they stand. They might not. But without a public debate and certainly without votes put on a board, there's no way to know for sure what they actually think.
So let me pivot this. You know, we've talked about what hasn't happened by and large so far. We have got until March 14th, and I know there are some legislators saying they're going to get done even before then. Of course, it seems to me they always say that, and then they're always scrambling at the end. What do we anticipate might get done, and is there anything I remember? When Janet and I worked at the Indianapolis Star, there was an old political editor there who would rail every time somebody declared some legislative proposal to be dead, saying, you know, the legislature is a marvelous environment for miracles. There are resurrections every day. So, you know, what do we expect might come out of this session other than fireflies and apparently bringing your guns to church?
Sunday sales.
Sunday sales.
There will be some kind of workforce development bill. The House and Senate have both passed different plans to promote worker training, to incentivize businesses, in some cases to train their own workers. That'll be hashed out over the next few months. That's such a top priority for Governor Holcomb. I can't imagine them not doing something about that. Exactly what it looks like will probably be figured out on March 14th.
Janet.
Well, I was just going to say the other thing that they did, and they were kind of patting themselves on the back even up to the last day, they took care of this early, was public schools, and, you know, saw 6,000 more students this fall than they were expecting. So both chambers got together and very quickly passed a package that will provide for more funding for public schools up to, and correct me if I'm wrong, $25 million this year and $50 million next year. So the two houses need to work on each other's version of the bill and then probably reconcile any differences. But it looks like that is going to be something that's going to be quick and easy to get done.
Yeah, I would suggest that'll probably end up being the first bill that Governor Holcomb signs out of the 2018 session. We've mentioned a couple bills that seem like locks at this point: Sunday sales, the CBD oil bill that Dan mentioned. Those measures dealing with CBD have passed out of both chambers now by fairly strong majorities. Certainly,
Fireflies.
Firefly will almost certainly happen. I would suggest that a couple other small issues, including. There's a bill to ensure that local governments can't ban short-term rentals like Airbnb. That looks like it's on a pretty clear path for passage this year, too. But which goes back to my original point, which is outside of workforce development, which is kind of a big issue but has been very under the radar up to this point and will probably continue to be because almost all of that debate will happen behind closed doors among, like, four people, the people working on the actual measures themselves and then the governor's office. There is no big thing that's, oh, that's going to happen. So it's a lot of these little things here and there. CBD over here, alcohol over there, Airbnb over here, the guns and church bill. There will be an abortion bill passed because it's the Indiana General Assembly, and we're going to pass an abortion bill every single year. So that those will all happen, and you can pretty much lock it down on most of those at this point.
There's another bill that might happen, and it also applies to schools, is, you know, providing some more guidelines and allowing the state to pretty much fire school boards. And they kind of set up, and everybody is looking at the bill and thinking, oh, it's Muncie and Gary. They've got the big problems in Indiana. But what's kind of in the fine print is the fact that they've set up some financial measures that could conceivably be applied to other school districts. So I think what you have here is, you know, once again, a state government that talks about, gee, we want local control, taking yet another step to usurp local control. They're doing that with the Airbnb case. They're doing that with the schools bill. They did it last year. Was it last year or the year before with the Marion County judges, the election of Marion County judges?
I mean, to be fair, there was a court case that sort of forced their hand on that one.
Yeah,
but they do this all the time.
Yeah. So,
well, it's local control when convenient.
Exactly.
It's local control when they want it to be local control, and when they want to assert their own authority, it's, well, the locals are creations of the state, and so we have a right to do this.
Right.
So we've talked a bit, and I think it was Brandon who alluded to this, that we've got a number of legislators who are planning to leave. How is that likely to change things going forward in any way, or is the impact likely to be nominal? Since you raised it, Brandon, I'd start with you, but I can see Dan leaning in too.
Well, so. a lot of them happen to be the people that are in the areas where Dan writes about.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the list of people who are retiring, nobody jumps out to me as being like a force of nature in the General Assembly that will fundamentally change the way that the building works. I mean, you have these particularly. Mm-hmm. You know, every couple of years now, it seems like you have a good slew of people who've decided I've had my fill of this place. We had really big numbers in 2010, 2012, and 2014, particularly 2012, who retired. It's not at that level this year, though. It's 15 is a pretty good number.
That's 10%.
Yeah, it's a pretty good number. So, but nobody jumps out to me, at least on the Republican side, I should say, as being, irreplaceable or, oh, man, this is arguably the one that makes the biggest difference already happened. Mm-hmm. And that's Brandt Hirschman in the state Senate, who was the mm-hmm. Senate majority floor leader who abruptly resigned to move to Washington, D.C. After his wife got a job out there right before the session. So that changed a lot of the sort of leadership picture in the Senate Republican caucus. But beyond that, I'm not sure we're going to see huge differences based on who we know won't be coming back at this point.
Dan.
What new people bring in is new ideas. And the people who have been in there forever, and some of the people, like Brandon said, from my area, have been in there for decades, and they're stepping aside.
And they're often in the minority now, too.
Right. But they're going to get replaced by people who haven't been a part of years of fights over things like aid and dying and other issues. And we saw this last year, 2 years ago, with the land-based casino legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Gaming was this, you know, huge issue for decades. We have to do it on a boat. The boat has to move. Oh, the boat can stay docked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, over time, the people who passed that original law leave the General Assembly. New people come in and they're like, why the heck are we doing this on a boat in this terrible, inaccessible place? Let's just put it on land and do it right. And that passed. And because people just didn't understand the compromises that were put in place years and years ago. So with 10% new members in the House, you're going to see these longstanding issues, maybe things like sexual orientation or gender identity in terms of a hate crime law. That might not matter to somebody who's 25 as it does to somebody who's 65.
So let me ask this. Do we anticipate that there might be any others? I heard some whispers at the start of the session that there were some big names who might possibly leave. Has anybody else heard anything? Janet, I'll start with you, but I see Brandon is leaning back into the mic, too.
No, I'll toss it to Brandon. He's actually been there a bit longer than I have.
Well, I mean, we've seen everybody file for reelection at this point. So that's how I know it's 15. The filing deadline is tomorrow. Every incumbent has filed for reelection except for the 15 who have said, I'm not running again, or I'm in one case, in the case of Republican Representative Jim Baird, who's running for Congress.
So if you had to place a bet, and we're going to do this real quickly because we've got just a little bit of time here, will there be any surprises between now and March 14th? And what's the most likely one? Brandon, you first.
Well, you can always bet on a surprise. What it might be, I'm not sure. Maybe something will move with guns in the second half of the session, something crazy.
Dan.
I agree there will be a surprise. I will be surprised when it happens.
You should be a politician, Dan. That was an elegant dodge. All right. Go ahead, Janet.
I wouldn't be surprised to see maybe another fight over some abortion-related issue popping up in the second half, especially when you have people not coming back who really don't have anything to lose.
Well, I think that will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guest, Brandon Smith, with Indiana Public Broadcasting, Janet Williams, my colleague at thestatehousefile.com, and Dan Carden with the Times of Northwest Indiana. Also like to thank our listeners for some great questions and comments. As always, it's fun to do talk radio for an audience with an attention span. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.